Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTGA podcast. We're back. It's 2021. We've still no games to talk about, but finally, some things have occurred in GA on GA pitches where people are not supposed to be doing anything GA-wise on GA pitches. So we've got that. We have the fact that we're going to have championship draws next week. We have a vague idea of what the league's going to look like. So slowly but surely, the GA world is reopening. And I'm glad to say I'm joined by... I've got Pat Spillane, I've got Brendan Cummins, I've got Rory O'Neill and Rory O'Neill's new hair. Welcome to you all.
Yeah, that's a change.
Hi, Mike.
For those of you only watching on pod, listening to us and not watching us, Rory is, I'm accustomed to seeing Rory with no hair, as little as me. Mine's natural. And he now has a lovely curly barnet. I haven't seen Rory since December.
We're sticking to the guidelines and the restrictions, Mikey, unlike Dublin and Man.
Pat is already.
Shots fired.
Pat, for those of you just listening, has a lot of greenery. He has grown a forest in his sun-dappled house below in Kerry.
And may I point out, there's a stretch in the evening. I've heard the cuckoo. There's a smell of freshly corn grass. And you know what I've got? I've got my championship haircut, all legally done by my good wife, Rosari.
So I thought you were about to say you've got a vaccine, Pat.
If there's any complaints about this hairdo, just complain to Rosari. So look, I'm looking forward, I'm ready and raring for the championship. We have a roadmap. If right was right, we should be just finished the league because we are elite at inter-county level, but that's another story. But we have a roadmap, we have a league, we have the inter-county lads training Monday, and away we go.
Yeah. Have you been vaccinated yet, Pat? Sorry, it just sprung into my head there when you said, I have, and then you said you had a haircut. I was wondering, have you got a vaccine?
On Monday, I register as a 65-year-old for my shot of AstraZeneca. Brilliant. And do I have any problems with taking AstraZeneca? Not a bother at all. I'd be more than delighted to get it.
There's nothing being able to clog you up yet, Pat. I don't think AstraZeneca is going to do it either. Brendan. Brendan, how's the 3 or 4 months been for you?
So look, they've been as frustrating as they have been for everybody else. I think the whole country is fairly contrary at this stage. I see on social media somebody said the government had lost the dressing room at one stage, and I think that's where it was gone. But yeah, we are starting to see the green shoots. I know in the club here we've had a couple of Zoom meetings about getting the kids back on the pitch from the 26th, and we're getting them on the 27th. So I got a load of hurling balls in the other day now. So you know, those things kind of do brighten up. We know something to look forward to, along with, of course, the elite footballers and hurlers around the country getting going. So the grassroots of the GAA will start to wake up out of the slumber as well. And that's important to mention. So that gets going the 26th. So we're looking forward to that. But no, it has been difficult. There's no doubt about it. I started back training in January because obviously I've been still playing a bit of the intermediate hurlers here and all that. And by the time I got to the middle of February, I thought, what's the point? And I haven't really done much since then. So I'll have to get back going. But that was what the sense I got from other people talking to them, that we all got going in January full of the enthusiasm of it. And by the time we got to the first week of February, we went out to hell with it. I'm eating Easter eggs and that's that. So looking forward to getting back at all that. So it's all good.
Will you be heading down the road to Kerry now on Monday night for an inter-county training?
No, I'm not with Kerry now.
P45.
I just couldn't give the commitment, I suppose, that's required between work and everything else that's going on in the world. So, I've left the Kerry set up, but I know they're going back training. Whenever they're allowed to go back training, that'll tell you, I think it's next week, all right? Yeah. And Fintan O'Connor's raring to go with the lads, so hopefully they'll go one step closer. League final and McDonough final last year. Maybe with me gone, they might win the two now, please God.
See, this is proof for all the listeners that all this idle small talk of ours is genuine. We don't pre-rehearse it. I didn't ask Brendan before we started recording what was going on in his life. So I just opened up old wounds there for him on air. Speaking of old wounds, we might as well open up those of Dublin and Monaghan, Pat. I don't think too many of us were shocked when we learned that inter-county teams were training. We're all around long enough to know the GAA's interesting approach to rules and abiding by rules. But I would personally say that I was shocked that Dublin not only were caught, but were actually bothering to train, to be quite honest with you.
Absolutely, Mikey. When I heard that the Dubs were caught breaking the I'm stunned. I was stunned. I was shocked. I was amazed because you're right. The Dubs, everything is managed. It's all about protecting the brand. It's all about controlling the narrative. No one knows what's happening inside in that camp. And like, it's a bit like the best buy and the brightest buy in the class suddenly being caught cheating, or you suddenly realize that the local parish priest has a wife and family in the next county. I mean, these are your role models. You know, you look up to the Dubs because these are the role models. They're supposed to be perfect. And that shocked me. And then having been shocked by Dublin, I was angry because I was just thinking, this particular training session, and it mightn't have been the first, it could have been the 21st, we don't know. But what made me angry was this took place less than 12 hours after the government had just introduced a new roadmap and had at last announced that at the end of April, on the 26th of April, or on the 19th of April, inter-county training could start. They were found out on the day that Neffert held a press conference and said, look, the next 6 to 7 weeks are vital. But you're right, Rory, this is Ireland. And you know goddamn well, anecdotally, you know there's a lot of counties at it. Anecdotally, you know there's loads of clubs at it. But you know, in Ireland, like when it comes to Schlievenism and Q-tourism and whataboutry, we're world champions at it. And you know, and our handy excuses, like our get out of jail card is, well, everyone else is doing it, so why can't we do it? It was wrong. It was bad. It broke the laws of the country. It broke the regulations of the GAA. And you're right. The Dublin team could beat most counties in Ireland with one hand tied behind the back. So not a good time. Like, could you imagine, lads? And I was just thinking about it. The GAA season hasn't started yet. The inter-county teams haven't started training yet. And four of our top managers are already suspended. You couldn't make it up. Yeah,
it's classic.
And just the final thing, you know, I know. And do I have any bit of sympathy? I start to do. When reeling in the years will be shown in 30 years' time, and they'll show newspaper headlines, and they'll talk about front page expose, these lads caught running around the field at 6:30 in the morning. Do you know? Dossiers being sent to the guards. And you'll start to say, in 20 years' time, you'll say, this couldn't have happened. It is bonkers. And I, in one sense, like, they were wrong. They were wrong, wrong, wrong. But in another sense, you'll start to say, oh, gee, lads. You know, I mean, there's no danger with transmission of COVID outdoors. Yeah. If games is safe, oh, God, save us. I think it was much ado about nothing, but the Dublin brand is certainly, it won't affect them as footballers or as a team, but the brand has been damaged to some
extent. Yeah,
Obviously the journalist to me was like, just shaking my head saying, that's a great story. You're right, Pat, when you break it down and talk about it logically, as people will in 30 years, you'll say, what the hell was that? But the tip-off, the lads turning up in their sponsored cars at 6:30 in the morning. Yeah. Like, if you're going to go to a clandestine training session, don't drive your sponsored car, I think would be the first lesson here.
I thought, though, Mikey, one thing for me was, firstly, I thought it was a wind-up because the story started, I got a text the night before, and I was saying, the story broke on April Fool's Day, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So I thought it was a wind-up to begin with. And the second thing is from what Pat said, where he said in 20 years' time, people will look back and say, Jenny, were we really, you know, assigning lads to, you know, to a bush at 6 o'clock in the morning to take a photograph of a few fellas kicking a football around the field? I'm not too sure if it will take 20 years. I think it could be a much shorter time where people will actually reflect and go, like, was that a bit over the top in terms of the reaction? I suppose, look, Dublin are Dublin. I think if it's the Clare footballers, does it make the front page of the Sunday or the Independent? No, it doesn't. But they're the marquee team in Gaelic games. They're the highest profile team. They're as close as you'll get to Manchester United in Irish Gaelic games. So it was a big story. And I think, it, like, to kind of corroborate both of what you've just said, think the really fascinating thing was that they got caught.
They got caught.
I mean, they got caught. It's just, for the life of me, I was just, now, whatever, like, there was an element of covert tactics being implied with the fact that they weren't wearing intercounty gear and that was a reasonably small session. Banty? Kind of.
That was fun. In fairness to Manon, if you're going to break a rule and regulation, do it in style.
Double down.
Bring 40 to the field and let's celebrate.
What happens in Corduff is supposed to stay in Corduff, I think, is the thing, isn't it?
40 lads in a session.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? It's just Brendan, the hurlers are obviously more relaxed and more law abiding and happier to just play by the rules and puck a ball against the wall.
It was said to me before, like, and this is obviously because I played football and all that, you don't see Steve Davis doing laps at the snooker table. So we have the artists at the game, so they were out at the gable end hurling balls off a wall by themselves and things like that. But I can see where people will go from 0 to 100 on the whole trending with Dublin, and obviously Pat is right with the brand, because like I've had a number of friends of mine who've lost people through COVID. And when there was only 10 people allowed at the funeral, it really hits home when you're in that circumstance. And then you see groups out training, and then you start to feel, well, there's why are they getting away with this, with the sacrifice being made? And I think that's why it becomes an extremely emotive topic from there. And I can see where that argument be coming from. And I think on the basis of a lot of people who are going mad about the Dopes thing, yes, it was a bit of a banter, and it's all part of the GAA. For those people or cohort people, unfortunately, went through that extra bit of loss and couldn't do what they wanted to do, we'll say, then I suppose I can see where they'd be coming from. But look, thankfully, none of the hurlers this time have been doing anything for once. the lawless club with no rules or regulations in the way we play or anything. So, but look, it's disappointing. I think that the punishment hasn't been dished out now, and we all move on to next week when we are in May, or the 8th or 9th of May, when the league starts and we get going into the positive side of the world.
Like, when we reflect back, and like Rory says, I think we'll be reflecting back very soon on this. I mean, one thing you would have to say is that the whole area of sport, and I mean all sports, but particularly outdoor sports, have been treated abysmal, because... Yeah. We're led to believe that all the rules and all the regulations are data-driven, evidence-based, and yet there's no evidence to show the playing of sport outdoors, properly regulated, no evidence. There's no evidence of spread of transmission of COVID from the playing games. And it's great that the county is back to 19th, but you pray tell me, how could a county footballers and hurlers be elite athletes one Sunday and the following day not be elite athletes?
Yeah.
Pray tell me how a first division soccer player or a lady playing in the National League soccer is more elite than, say, a Camogie player, a ladies footballer, or an intercounty. They're not. So that's number one. I thought the GA were treated badly in terms of intercounty elite. But right, that's number one. The second problem I see with regard to sport is that why not bring the youngsters back the last couple of weeks? We have a thousand people in some schools indoors in classes, and yet we have to wait till next Monday week before we get a few youngsters out in regulated pods training. That's wrong. And you know what? Also, when you talk about elite, what's interesting is when the soccer season were in pre-season, they were allowed challenge games. Now it appears that the elite inter-county teams are not allowed to have challenge games during their training. And finally, you know, and Brendan is now an intermediate hurler. And intermediate hurlers and junior hurlers, the social footballer, the social rugby fella, we have forgotten. I mean, while it's great to see the youngsters have a date to come back at the end of the month, the inter-county buys are coming back, but we've completely forgotten the 95% of the players in the GAA, the club hurler and the club footballer, who just wants to play a game. He's not interested in trophies. He likes the crack. He likes the socialising. He likes the training 2 or 3 days a week. These lads have been without sport, have been without interaction for 8 months. It's crazy, based on no evidence.
And I think on that as well, Pat, like, I think there's a couple of points worth making. And again, look, none of us are claiming to be anyway expert in terms of the disease and disease control, but what we would be experts on, or certainly would have a level of expertise on, is youth sport and how sport for young people and the important role that that plays. And if you look at, like, if any of us playing sport, and like, obviously I had a very, very mediocre career in comparison to the two stellar careers the lads have had, but I'd still ask them, like, the most formative years in the development of you, both as a person and as a player playing sport, I would argue are the years that you sort of make that transition from primary school into secondary school. So you're talking the ages of between maybe 12, 13 and 14, right? I think they're that's an extremely significant time in a young person's life, boys and girls. Now, for the last effectively year and a half, more or less you could say 2 years, because it's effectively two seasons already. Well, it hasn't been 2 years. That has been wiped out. Now, that is going to have a huge effect, because I can guarantee you this, and I know this because this is factual. We are going to lose people. We're going to lose a lot of people to Xboxes and PlayStations, to various activities, to extracurricular activities and stuff. Their interests will have just gone elsewhere. And that crucial time, I think, those people never had a voice. Those young people never had a voice in this. And I think they've been treated shamefully, actually, in all of it.
Pat, I would take up on your point that Junior B hurlers don't care about glory. We're waiting on the Wicklow Junior B hurling final now since last October, November. We don't even know who we're playing yet. And we, you know, it may never get played, Pat. And I don't know how many more trophies I have in me, you know, so I would reject that point. We have the public health element is a well ploughed furrow at this stage.
Excuse me, Mikey. I'm not so sure about how, but John B. Keane was once asked, what was the most dangerous animal on the planet? And he said the most dangerous animal on the planet was a Junior B cornerback in football with varicose veins.
same applies to hurling.
and a home of deep heater.
Probably.
Yeah, the sociopaths are still putting a corner back, whether it's football or hurling, don't worry about that. Like I said, the public health element of this is a well-plowed furrow, and I think most people's views on it are well known. I do just want to return, Brendan, for a second to the to Dublin and Monaghan, and just what it is about the GAA that, you know, and I'm not singling out Dublin and Monaghan here, that's the point. This idea of the rules, they don't apply to us because we know that the lads 2 miles down the road are breaking the rules as well. We've all been guilty, like, I'm not saying holier than thou or anything. It is quite a, I wouldn't say uniquely GAA thing, but it's something that is, you know, it's very well associated with the GAA. Would you agree?
Yeah, it is a bit to a certain extent. I think when you're with a group, and maybe especially with Dublin, when they've had huge success and all, you have to, at some stage, create a grudge. Now, you can't have a them and us. Now, you can't pick a fight with everyone every year. But if you can have something that's special and unique to your group, that we, like you saw in the last number of years, teams training Christmas Day. You know, they train New Year's morning at 6 o'clock. You know, this kind of stuff. Like, I remember Davies team when I think we beat him below in Páirc Cliath. We gave him a bit of a spanking down there. And they trained the following morning at 6 o'clock because he thought, right, what are we going to do? We're going to start now from ground zero again, hardship. And if we turn up here, when I stand in the dressing room, I can say, we trained Christmas Day and they didn't. We trained the day after they got a high. That's the commitment. They didn't. And it's an X factor that you're looking for if you're going to win any match. And it's not something you can essentially get physically training on a pitch. It's a mental element. And I think that's where they're looking for the inches now within the game, because everybody's as fit as each other. Majority of people in hurling, the fact you can catch it, hit it, pick it up and run is pretty much a given. But what propels you forward to chase the fella or chase the lost causes and all this kind of stuff, that's really, and I think that the great Paddy O'Shea said it in one of his the documentaries before, that if the ball goes out over the line, you sprint out over the line to follow it, even if you know you're not going to get to it. And it's that desire that's ingrained in players, and that's what managers, I think, are looking for when they do things like that we did this and no one else did, and that kind of thing propels you forward. And I think that's what they're kind of looking for with all this kind of stuff, because they're not going to get any fitter in a week or two, like, but mentally I'd say that's what they're looking for.
And there's the element is as well, Pat, isn't there? It's some people call it herd mentality, but the fact of the matter is, if you're an intercounty footballer or hurler, and even this might even apply to a Brian Fenton or a TJ Reid, if your manager tells you to turn up for training, whether there's a pandemic ongoing in level 5 restrictions or not, you're kind of expected to turn up, aren't you? And it'll be remembered if you don't.
Well, I actually wrote about that last week because I can see where they're coming from. We, under Mick O'Dwyer, we worship Mick O'Dwyer. Whatever Mick O'Dwyer asked of us as players, we did it. If he asked us to cycle naked around the ring of Kerry tomorrow morning, we'd all cycle naked around the ring of Kerry. We did 30-something training sessions in a row one time. I mean, 30-something. And again, it goes back to what Brendan is saying. You're believing you can get... It's about getting that edge. About getting that edge. But, so I can see where the Dub players... I mean, I see the mentality of the Dub players very much like the mentality of the Kerry team I was involved. Last year is gone. It's a new chapter. You're starting afresh. And successful athletes and successful footballers are always trying to raise that bar higher and do even better. And that's what successful sports people are, looking for that edge, raising that bar a bit higher. But it does refer to something that the whole Monaghan Dublin scenario, whatever like that, there's a couple of things. One, the whole issue and inter-county managers, because there is no doubt about it. We know in terms of spending, the inter-county bandwagon in terms of spending had gone out of control. 2019, 30 million spent on training inter-county teams. And bear in mind, that's just vouched expenses. We don't know what happened under the table. Right, that's number one. In actual fact, even if you look at the spending from last year, which was a restricted season, there's still quite a lot. But the problem is, inter-county managers are out of control. And inter-county managers are appointed by county boards, but once appointed by county boards, there's a hands-off approach. There's no accountability. There's no nothing. They run their own little, they're like little dictators or little emperors in their own little empire. And they do things as they see fit themselves. The county board has a standoff approach. But, you know, like, I mean, Mike McGordon, I suppose some of you read the article with Mike McGordon over the last couple of days. And Mike McGordon, physical trainer involved with the All Blacks, top strength and conditioning, top physical trainer in Ireland, involved with the All Blacks, involved with Armagh, involved with many club teams. One of the foremost experts on strength and conditioning in Ireland. And he issued a warning yesterday, which should be taken on board by everyone, that inter-county training is too much. They're overdoing inter-county training. And I know we talk about at the moment, right, a lot of counties haven't been training. But Christ almighty, the amount of gym sessions they've been doing, the amount of, like, I know all of them, like, the exercise bikes have been sent to the house, the gym equipment have been sent to the house, they've had one and two, they're now on their second gym program, right? They're now also on their second speed and stamina program. They're all working with GPS systems. So a big brother is watching you morning, noon and night. These lads, even if they're not training collectively, individually, they are training savage hard at the moment. You would ask the question, are they training too hard? I think they are.
Yeah, it's a fair point, isn't it, Rory, that the season's got shorter this year and last year for obvious reasons. You know, we might discuss it in a while, like the league's obviously truncated. You know, we've got no backdoor in the football and a limited backdoor in hurling, no group stages, etc. Yet, as Pat says, there's probably not a professional sports team, not even NFL teams who have a three-month season, probably have a pre-season to game ratio that inter-county footballers and hurlers have this year.
The one thing, though, that the pandemic has probably done, it's probably squeezed that up a small bit. I mean, look, they're not allowed to go back collectively training until the 19th. Okay, they might have been doing individual stuff. I think, like, if you're playing at elite level, I think you'll probably always tip away with individual programs, irregardless of whether the county border, which in expenses and running up the bills. But I think the condensed window this year and last year, I think, to certainly offer hope that we can do things in a different way from here on, and that an awful lot of the expense, an awful lot of the time, money resources and effort put in to the preparation of teams, as Pat said, is probably over the top and unnecessary.
It is.
You know, and I think that's maybe the big lesson that we'd probably take out of this. And hopefully it'll mean that there's a better crack then given to the club. I think that's already happened. I mean, we're going to see it in 2022 with the split season and very much condensed inter-county calendar, even though it's still going to stretch out from around February right into the end of July. And the club then will throw in and begin. But I think, yeah, like I think the pandemic has been a catalyst for a lot of things. It speeds up things. And I think that's certainly one area that I think that it's definitely, fast forwarded the negatives. And it's probably revealed the futility behind an awful lot of what teams were doing. And a lot of I think you mentioned before, Pat, the cottage industries that had developed around inter-county teams. And Brendan, you'd probably be very aware. You wouldn't necessarily go to say there's a lot of spoofology going on, but there might have been a bit of spoofology going on with a lot of the hangers-on and people that were, getting involved in the inter-county scene, offering this service and that service. I'm sure nutrition and health and physical training and all that type of stuff and video work is important, but maybe this, again, has sort of crystallized the importance of who needs to be there and who doesn't. What is essential and what is not? What am I prepared to pay for and what am I prepared to go without? And I think the pandemic has actually helped in that regard, I would argue.
Maybe. Yeah, but I think if you're getting a backroom team together and you're talking about the bar going up the whole time, that means then the training has to increase. I mean, if I stood in front of the Kerry hurlers last year and we didn't do video analysis or player profile and on the opposition and things like that, the lads would say to you, like, this is a joke shop here.
You're going backwards.
You do need to have a certain level. I can see where you'd say it's gone over the top, but you think about, if I'm an inter-county manager in the morning, all I want to do is make sure that my team are 100% prepared when we hit the ground in June for the first round of the championship. Now, there'll be fallers by the wayside. There'll be fellas who aren't going far enough in the bleep test, and I'll just bin them because that's the way it is. Because I know when I face Garrod Hegarty and Morrissey and Keane Lynch and Joe Canning and all these animals that are out there that could potentially beat you, my team needs to be physically strong enough and fit enough to match them. Now, sports science has become a huge part of our game and probably the most expensive part of our game over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, if I'm in somebody involved in sports science, whether it's nutrition, sports psychologist, whether it's a strength and conditioning coach, what I'm saying is, look, I'll get you the extra yard you need to win the match. And the inter-county manager then, if you think about it, he doesn't have a 5-year window to develop players. He has a 1-year window. Because the Sunday game or whatever show will say, they were badly run. They weren't prepared right at all. They're a disaster. And that manager is sitting at home looking at it going, I should have ran the shite out of him and I didn't. I should have made him go more in the gym and I didn't. And like one player said to me years ago, Chip, sure, if it doesn't work out, the manager will be gone and we'll be all back next year. Do you know what I mean? So managers are driving this because the gun's loaded to them and it's taken as a personal insult nearly if they don't perform because they're vilified then in the public. And that's driving it. And players then as well are expecting massive standards. Like, you have to now have a sports psychologist. You have to have nutritionists. Mm-hmm. You have to have GPS trackers. You have to give a report every Monday as to how far you ran compared to the opposition. You have to. And if you don't have those, you will lose the players really, really quickly now.
Yeah, but Brendan, I beg to differ. Gaelic football, and to a lesser extent, hurling, I genuinely believe that we're reaching the stage where we're going to have a conversation about where the game of Gaelic football is going and where the game of hurling is going and how it's evolving. So where is the game of Gaelic football going? Gaelic football, strength and conditioning, key. Possession, key. Risk-taking, conservative game plans, safety first. That's the game plan. And you start to say, right, if there's millions being spent, no stone being left unturned, why aren't we getting really exciting top quality games? And we're not. I mean, you look at Gaelic football, the high fielding is gone. The goal scoring ratio has dropped. Long range points are gone. It's about possession, 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 and waiting for an opportunity. And you look at hurling and you say, yes, I can. And you say, Limerick were, and I don't know much about hurling, you know far more. But when I look at hurling, I start to say, a lot of the matches last year, I was sort of being turned off because I thought, this is turning into Gaelic football. Strength and conditioning, strong, big athletes, great stamina, keeping possession, playing in pods. It wasn't turning me on. And you know, and I last night before the Liverpool game, I was flicking around channels. And the 1986 All-Ireland Senior Football Final was on. And look, I'm not going to say football was better years ago, hurling was better. It's not. Gaelic football is probably better nowadays, hurling is better. But what I was looking last night at the Kerry Tyrone game is, yes, there was a lot of Hail Mary kicking. There was a lot of pot shots. But the game was full of twists and turns and unpredictability and 50-50 challenges. And it was a rollercoaster, exciting game. And I look at Dublin, and I look at Dublin, and I said, I looked at Manchester City last night, and I looked at Dublin, and you start to say, they're the same thing. They're machines. You know, Pep Guardiola says, it's about getting into rhythm. It's about 1,000 passes, and it's about waiting for the opportunity to attack. And Dublin are no different, and they're very good, but you're sort of saying, I think we need to demand more from the games.
Yeah, I think the sports scientists, Pat, I think, and I've seen the reports you get after matches, possessions, turnovers, like there's even apps out there now that they go red, amber and green. If a player is given away a possession, it's a -2. If he gets a clean catch, it's a +1. And then, you know, and it's fed back to the player. So you're right. I think that's where the problem can be, is that the sports scientists can take the risk taker out of the player. And I mean, that's what happens. And if you take, and that's why, if ever I'm involved with hurling teams, I want sports science around it, don't get me wrong, but I don't want to take away the risk taker from my player, because you cannot win anything in this world without taking chances, as far as I'm concerned. You can't without risking. Correct. And that's the way it is. Like the player who decides to stay in their shell and I'll just give the 5-yard pass or play the ball over and back across the pitch. Like Tipperary won a Munster final last year, because I think Cork forgot there was goalposts at the end of the pitch. They thought it was 5 possessions as a score, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's where it becomes restrictive and it suffocates a team. But it's the good man. It's like John Kiely has as many sports science around him. But you couldn't say, like, I know they play to a particular pattern and style. Yes. And it's one that will win the matches in the long term, not in the short term, right? And that's what they're trying to do, a consistent performance level. But you can still get Aaron Gillan inside and he'll throw the ball over his shoulder. He'll take a chance. So hurling still has that element within it. Now, it is trying to be restricted. I agree on that. But football has been clamped down because of don't give away possession. Oh, he gives the ball away too much. You can't play him the next day. Like, it could have been an inch away from being a goal pass. And it's just, I think it's putting the shackles on players.
Are Dublin not the exception that maybe disproves the rule that they are very controlled, they're very measured, they have that Pep Guardiola thing. But they wouldn't win if Kieran Kilkenny and Conor Callaghan weren't two of the best footballers in the country and able to score a point off either foot from 40 yards. Like that, they still need that, don't they?
Where do they score? I mean, these boys, I mean...
Okay, can score from 40 yards, maybe don't
but
after
they
this,
don't
suppose.
Score. You look at the scoring rate, you look at where...
It's all around the D's.
It's all... low percentage shots, because it's all choreographed, it's all rehearsed, it's a playbook. So the Dublin attacking playbook is taken straight away from it's taken straight out from the basketball player playbook, where you stretch the defense as much as possible, you set up a screen, and you get your best shooter into the scoring zone, and he pops a 20 meter kick over the bar. And I agree with, look, we're not being cavemen and saying there isn't a role for statisticians, there isn't a role for video analysis, there isn't a role for all these fellas. Mm. Of course there is. And as Paddy said, Lord Mercy and Soul said one time, you know, a grain of rice can tip the scale. And if one of these guys can give you that grain of rice to tip the scale, great. But at the same time, sometimes you can make a racehorse out of a donkey. He must have the individual skills. But these guys, with an obsession with stats, and producing a certain type of player, we forget about flair. We forget about individuality. And as Brendan said, we don't do risk taking. And sometimes that's the beauty of sport, that you should have flair and you should have individuality and you should have risk taking. And we're not, we're getting less and less. And that's why I said there's more and more money being spent on inter-county teams. There's more and more people involved in preparation of teams. And let's give us a better quality and a better exciting game.
Yeah.
It's not much to ask.
No, and look, I'm glad to see you've both been thinking while you've had your formals off. I think this might be a subject we return to. I did want to move on just quickly, because I don't know if everybody is aware. We won't go through the fixtures because they haven't been finalised, but we do have our groups for the hurling, Brendan. We'll quickly go through them, just Division A, which seems to be divided on a West-East scenario, apart from Clare being chucked in with Dublin, Kilkenny, Wexford, Laois and Antrim. Yeah, the trip Clare to Antrim is definitely outside the 20k anyway. And the other group is Westmeath, Galway, Limerick, Tip, Cork, and Waterford. It's going to be a sprint, and Brendan, there's going to be some very, like, you've almost got the Munster and Leinster championships there with a couple of wild cards thrown in. It's hard to imagine that this is going to be taken terribly seriously, bar by the odd manager who really feels he needs to win some silverware.
Yeah, well, it's cash. You'd say in the public, from the outside looking in, they won't take it serious. But I'm a 23-year-old, say Paddy Cadell in Tipperary, and I'm playing in that first game against Limerick, we'll say, of a Saturday evening at 5:30 in Turles. That's my All-Ireland final. And these fellas, and this has given, this I think will give managers a chance to blood players. Last year, we kind of lost out that chance and opportunity to see what underage players could play, and 21, 22, 23-year-olds who had had underage success, and those particularly in Tipperary were all mad to see what these lads can do. So with those four or five matches there, Liam Sheedy certainly with a chance, the same as every other manager. Liam Cahill the same way. He just motivated pretty much the players he had before and in past regimes in Waterford and got him going. So he'll get a chance to look at other players. So I think when I talked to supporters through last year, they were given out because the league, there was not an exciting, I didn't see some young fella coming on that I saw a spark from, you know what I mean? So while we'll say on the outside, and it doesn't really, there isn't a league final, right? So it doesn't matter as such, but what does matter is that you put your name down for when June comes and the championship is on, that you want to be on the first 15. That is, since Adam was a boy, that's what the league was all about. And that's not going to change this year. And I'm delighted with both groups. It's great to see Antrim up there and see how they got on with Laois and the bigger guns. Haven't seen them at first hand. They were a lot stronger than any of the teams of Joe McDonagh last year. They're ready to go. So hurling has spread to Antrim as well now. And they're back to where I believe they should be at the top table of it. So, you know, it is positive from that point of view.
And for Westmeath, Galway, Limerick, Tip, Cork and Waterford, they're with the big boys now, aren't they?
It's tough. Yeah. That is tough.
It's big stuff, all right. But look, they'll be fine. Westmeath struggled last year in the Joe McDonagh. They were under the cosh. They didn't get much momentum on. I think David Glennon is getting involved there with him now. He's in that additional experience in his dressing room will certainly add a huge amount to them. But I think for them up there, it's all about trying to get players developed and not take too many clippings. They'll play with a sweeper in all of those games, which is fine. But I think if they can put up performances along the line of it, they'll get enough to bring him into the Joe McDonagh then. But it is certainly a daunting task. But again, I'd certainly rather be playing in Division 1A or 1B hurling than anywhere else in the world. It's a good test. It's a good way to motivate players to see what they're made of. And like anybody, you want to pitch yourself up there and see if you're any good, and this will certainly test them.
Yeah, and then Rory, you've got the football, one north and one south are interesting. You know, Tyrone, Donegal, Monaghan, and Armagh there in north, and Kerry, Galway, Roscommon, and Dublin in south. So there's, again, the same question. There are going to be some very tasty matchups, which are probably ones we'll expect to see later in the summer again, but I suppose, as Brendan says, it's about the 15 on the pitch who will make what they will of them.
The one thing I would say, well, more so in relation to football, I think for both competitions really, but particularly for football, I think it's a real shame that they couldn't squash in a second chance for Gaelic football. I mean, you could have a situation, it's very unlikely, but it's possible. And you might see someone like David Clifford play two championship matches across the best part of 3 years. And one of those championship matches, no, look, I don't envisage that.
Don't tell me Rory's going to bring up Cork match, is it? Oh, gee.
I don't envisage it. I think, unfortunately, from Cork's perspective, it'll be in Killarney. It'll be high summer. The ball will be moving a lot. It'll be the polar opposite of what we experienced last November in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And I think a hot summer's day in Killarney, usually that only means one thing when Cork and Kerry is concerned. So, I do like to go back to the point that I do think the backdoor element for football would have been desirable from my point of view. I think like you have a situation whereby you have league semi-finals factored in. Were they necessary? There will potentially be league finals, but it'll be predicated on the teams involved not being out in the championship the following week. So what does that then actually say about your league in the integrity of that competition, that you're just prepared to disband it if teams happen to be in championship the following week, or if those two teams happen to meet, they would double up as a league final? To my mind, would have been far better. Okay, play the three games, start the week earlier as well, like the hurlers start like the same week as hurling, and put in at least one backdoor element, I think. And I know Fergal McGill made the point that it would have required an extra 3 weekends, but like there's no guarantee the club will be given the green light to go back playing games anytime soon, so I don't know what the rush was, you know.
Can I talk about the league, because seeing as I'm a resident of the home of the Division One National League champions, and how proud we were when we won that. I mean, there was bonfires blazing in every crossroads in Kerry after we won the National League last year against.
That was to keep warm, I think, Pat, was it?
Against Donegal B in Tralee. I mean, it was one of those glorious days in Kerry football. And after that, you know, our season was made after that. So, irrespective of what happened in the championship, that last year was all about the league. So I agree with you, Rory. I mean, thank you, Rory, bringing up that cock. Because that, I tell you this, lads, I swear to God, I know they say in the grieving process it's important to let go. I swear to God, that Cork Kerry match, I can let go.
If it's any consolation, Pat, Tip would have bet you in the final anyway, so you don't have to worry about it.
It wasn't about that, you know. It was just everything. We won the National League. And then I knew there was writing on the wall. We played Monaghan, and the team that picked for Monaghan, I thought, yeah, he's playing tricks with this now. This is not the real team it's going to be. This is now B team we've sent up to Monaghan. And then I remember in the middle of the Monaghan game, he took off two forwards and he replaced the two forwards with two half backs. And I said, oh, geez, maybe he's playing a game now here, I said. And unfortunately, that was what he was pre-planning for. So look, it was a desperate year. A couple of things. The league in football is certainly more competitive, more enjoyable than, say, the league in hurling. There's no doubt about that. And I'd have to agree with Rory. I really believe, I mean, the football teams have been treated abysmally. The hurlers have a backdoor. The hurlers have a second chance. Of course the footballers should get a second chance. Why couldn't, as Rory said, why couldn't the football teams come back 3 weeks instead of 4 weeks? Why did the football boys need an extra week? They didn't. And let's think, you know, we're in a new... Maybe there was an opportunity for an open draw as a once-off.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When you're faced with something that's... why not try new things? Why not try new ways? Why not think outside the box? Surely to God, one of those National League games could have easily been played midweek, because people say, oh no, they're all working. But they're not all working. They're all working from home. They're all based at home. There's no fella stuck away or whatever like that. Could you play a midweek match between the two of the nearest counties or whatever? Of course you could. So I'm very disappointed that there isn't a backdoor for the championship. The good thing about it is that Kerry start off this year, in this year's Munster Football Championship, we start off in the quarterfinal and we have a good chance, hopefully.
Actually, one of your potential competitors there will be Waterford. And just to mention, because London have been excluded this year, a word for the teams in Division 4 South, Waterford, Carlow and Wexford, who will each have a bye week and will play exactly two league games before almost inevitably losing their first round championship match. They're going to have three matches in the year. If there was ever a case for bringing back the Kilkenny senior football team, this was it. They could have slotted in there, played three games, you know, tested the water, dipped their toe in, see what they thought of it,
But, you're right, Mikey. And bear in mind, these lads will have trained for 6 months, and they'll have 6 months training put in for Dublin. Or bear in mind, what team will get the short straw of drawing Dublin on next Monday or Tuesday in the Leinster Football Championship, because that means they'll have maximum probably 5 games for the entire year. Six months training for 5 games. It's bananas, and it's unfair.
It does make it a little bit difficult.
When you talk about, look at the equivalent of Division Four North, and you have Louth of Division Three North, isn't it?
No, Division Four North is Louth, Antrim, Sligo, Leitrim.
So Louth, new manager Mickey Hart. Antrim, new manager Enda McGinley. Sligo, new manager Tony McAtee. And Leitrim coming down for Division 3 with Terry Hyland in charge. Now, that's a competitive division.
It could be quite defensive. Quite defensive.
The scoreboard operator won't be overwhelmed.
And they are all genuinely North teams as well. They won't have to travel too far. There are a few quirks in the geographical split, all right, but that one's
there, Mikey. Couldn't Leitrim and Sligo play midweek to free up a chance of going through a back door?
Jeez, Pat, you've more chance of getting a United Ireland than getting midweek GA games, I think, now, really, haven't you? It's just not going to happen. I know it's been mooted so many times that it is
except inter-county teams have no problem playing challenge games midweek.
I know. It's mad. Well, it sounds like you're all in a good mood to give out anyway, so it's good because we have a new slot, which is in the podcast purely because I thought it had a funny name and I'm very proud of it. So it's our version of Room 101, where everybody gets to vote for something that they do not want to see in this year's GA championship or season, and it's called Vanish Door. I'll have it in. I'll have it written down here so everybody you see how clever I am. So Pat, we'll go to you first. What would you like to put through the banished door?
Kerry's tactical game plan from last year against Cork.
Well, Rory's going to vote against that anyway. Rory wants to see that kept. you have discussed it, Pat. So the scourge of defensive football finally made it over to the McGillicuddy Reeks, and you wanted turfed out again swiftly.
All I just want is to know, is Kerry footballers believing in themselves and not worrying about the opposition? It's a simple little request. Not too much to ask for.
Okay. I don't think, Brendan, you're probably, as much as you're a Tip fan, you're probably not a fan of defensive Kerry football either. A football purist like you.
Yeah, it's very unusual to see 15 Kerry players retreating towards their own goals. Oh. It reminded me when I was playing football against Kerry, when we'd all have to be following Kerry fellas back towards our goals. But yeah, certainly unusual. But we'll take it here in Tip. And we talked about risk taking earlier. The Tipperary footballers, Quinn Libben and Sweeney and these lads, they'll take chances. And that's why they won a Munster Championship and everybody else was looking on.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fairness. There was a lack of shackles and they had a go and they were laughing during the match. And it was just a fun element to having a caught shots off the outside of the foot. Yep. You know, that kind of thing. And that's really why I think after that Munster final, Tipperary people were so emotional about the whole thing. We're proud that we played with a spirit and a happiness that lifted all of us, to be honest with you. So,
The one, and you're spot on, Brendan. And the interesting thing for me around Kerry and I suppose the transformation I don't know whether it was a once off or whether it was something that they were planning for Dublin or whatever it might have been. But if you go back to the previous All Ireland final of 2019, where they really had a go now, they had a cut and they came, they probably should have won the first day. Would that be fair to say, Pat, that Kerry had that game? Kerry had that game for the taking. And it was because they were
adventurous. Give you a simple statistic from that game, and I think it sums it up. When Killian Spillane put Kerry 1 pint up, between extra time and the end of the game, there was 12 minutes. In those 12 minutes, Kerry never had a kick at the Dublin goal again. I think that says it all. They retreated into their shell. Their game management was poor. It cost them a possible All-Ireland. And guess what? When they're down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, 10, 11 months later or 12 months later, and they're ahead, a chance of winning, and their game management left them down again for the second year in a row. That's the big Kerry, if Kerry can sort out their game management and can close out games, we have a
I think the best way for Kerry, like watching him long enough, and so are you obviously, Pat, but the best way for me, for Kerry to be closing out games, is just to go for the kill, like Kerry teams have always done. Not to sit back and try and hope that we're, you know, just going to sit in here for the last 7 or 8 minutes and frustrate the opposition and hope that our 3 or 4 point lead will stick it out. Like Kerry traditionally would just, they just go for it. They've always had a joie de vivre about their play. They've always had the ability, kind of a swashbuckling style about them. Always great forwards. That tradition doesn't look to be stopping anytime soon, certainly with Clifford on the scene. And I don't know. I just felt that instead of their transgression, instead of coming off the back of that 2019 final and pushing on in an attacking sense, which is where I felt their evolution needed to go, they went the opposite way. And to my mind, maybe it regressed a bit.
Yeah. Well, who knows, Rory? The missing piece of the jigsaw for Kerry this year could be a Cockman, Pat Falvey, our new performance coach, the Mountaineer. So we could be scaling new heights in 2021.
Well, I'm going to make an executive decision here, and I'm going to send negative Kerry football through the banished door, because I can't listen to Pat complaining about this for another year. It needs to go. It has to go. It's upsetting our Pat too much, so we're going to get rid of it. You. Yes. Okay. Next to you, Rory.
Unfortunately, it's wishful thinking, because it came out yesterday that they're going to be persisted with. But
I knew this would come up.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of water breaks. I find them.
Yeah.
I find they completely disrupt the momentum of a game. I don't think they're necessary. I think, look, if you're going onto a pitch, I think if you're playing somewhere down the middle, maybe, but there will be an opportunity. There will be a break in play where you can get a drop of water if you really need it, and you can have your water brought on. I understand that they've gotten rid of the Mayor Forna and they don't want Mayrishkas and they don't want people running out. And I accept all of that. And I think that's all a good thing. Tidying up pitch incursions and on-field activity was a welcome development. But for me, the water breaks have effectively devolved the game into four quarters as opposed to two halves, and I just don't like it.
Yeah, I don't think too many people are going to argue, Brendan. Even from the coaching perspective last year, did you find it useful or did you find it a hindrance?
Yeah, it's extremely useful from a coaching point of view that you can take it in quarters like that. It was a huge help to be able to get in amongst the team. Now, of course, if you have momentum, then you're obviously given out that it's been broken. But I think all things being equal, from a coach's point of view, it was nice to get in amongst the players after 15 to 18 minutes and have a bit of a chat and then get them out again. But the question was then, do we meet in the middle of the pitch? Do we meet in the sideline? Where do we meet? How quickly do we get back out again? Why are they taking so long to come back out? How long do we actually have? Are we adding it on at the end of the match? All this kind of stuff happened as well. So I think if we could run through 35 minutes, well, I think players would probably prefer that, I think, in the long run. And lads coming in with tactics boards and stuff like that just kind of late mattered. And like Pat said, it takes the risk out of a fella. If he thought about taking a chance after 18 minutes, he has to come in and listen to the manager with the tactics board, tell him, you shouldn't be doing that. Give it to him now. Your stats are low. So, you know, no, I think two halves.
Pat, I think I know you're not a fan.
No, I think well, God bless that they got rid of the Mayor Fremner, because the Mayor Fremner was the greatest scourge that ever hit the game of Gaelic football, because he was a pest. He was used tactically to get in the eye line of the goalie from kickouts, to stand in space, to infuriate the referee, to infuriate the opposition. He was mouthing. Most of these guys, these Mayor Fremners, did they serve a purpose? I thought they were sort of preening peacocks who just like to be seen anyway and show off. Look at how important I am gesticulating my hands all over the place. Oh, God riddance to the Mayor Fremner. And the water break shouldn't be there either.
Yeah, no, okay, it's gone. Brendan, what have you want? What do you want to get rid of?
Yeah, well, I think I'm hoping it'll be gotten rid of, because there's medicine in place. But I hope we don't kill the patient, as the fella says. Is the pulling down of the players that we saw an awful lot more of in the last 18 months in hurling. They get inside 20 yards and someone wraps them up, or, oh, sorry, I leg tripped them, or, oh, I fell over them and I'm really sorry about that ref, and, oh, sure, look, we're all God's children kind of stuff. I think now with the introduction of the penalty and all that kind of thing and the black cards, I'm hoping that'll get rid of it, because I certainly don't want to see a player being leg tripped with a hurley in Croke Park ever again, or dragging somebody down, knowing damn well, we all know it's being done now, it's being coached, and why wouldn't it be coached when it gives you that edge or that grain of rice we're talking about earlier? Mm-hmm. But hopefully now that'll be eradicated out of the game, and anybody who thought about coaching it will certainly have to change their tactics after this year.
Yeah, and it's the fear, Rory, is the risk of unintended consequences. That rule seems like a good idea, but actually, until it's put into practice, you're never quite sure if you have it. There's some kind of butterfly effect, and it's going to open another door for managers or players.
That's why the league is probably that's one of the single most important reasons for having certainly league hurling this year, is because at least you're going to get an opportunity to road test that, and if there are any squeeze points or any, as you said, unintended consequences, they should become apparent, and then you'll be able to hopefully tidy up rules again. But I think it was beginning to become a scourge. I think in both codes, it was less in football, because obviously there was the black card was already in situ in football. But I think it's a good thing. Like I've always been of the view, and this is something that sometimes bugs me about hurling, man, particularly, but GAA in general. But it's very, very apparent in hurling. Mm. I think you should always take an introspective look at how your game is evolving, and always look to keep your rule book in pace with the evolution of the sport. Managers and players and pundits and coaches and everybody, they're always looking for ways. Like if you think back, for instance, to the famous Anthony Nash penalty, where he was scooping the ball in about 10, 15 metres and then basically pulling on it when he was inside the six-yard box, you know? Like, he obviously found a squeeze point, and they had to change the rule then as a result. But that only came about because they were really worried about the health and safety aspect. I think GAA and hurling, like, they should be looking at trends. Like, a big trend for me, particularly in hurling, is we are definitely seeing a drop in the amount of goals being scored. Limerick now are going out, they're banging over 20, 28, 29, 31, 32 points. The drop of a hat, Tip the same, Galway the same, racking up big scores. If we get a goal chance, we'll take it. But we're not too worried about creating them. So I think, again, let's start experimenting. Try 4 points for a goal. Even try 5 points for a goal. Like, you know, I think you have to constantly keep pace with the coaches who are looking to see the weak points in the rule book and move with the times. And I think sometimes in the land of Gaelic games, we can be very, very conservative on that side of things.
I'm just in a state of shock and disbelief that the game of the gods hurling has cynical play. It's just, I don't think I'd sleep tonight.
We eradicated it very quickly, Pat, with rules. Yeah.
rules. Not every hurling man is in favour.
You're always saying we've no rules. We won now.
Yeah, I think not every hurling man is in favour, but they're in place anyway. Okay. They're gone. That's gone. Tripping. Actually, Rory, you stole my one. What I wanted to put through the banished door this week was actually goalless hurling matches. The Munster hurling final, one All-Ireland semi-final, and the All-Ireland final last year were without goals. And I don't care if it's a 30-yard screamer.
Sorry, Mikey. So what's that? The Munster hurling final?
One All-Ireland semi and the All-Ireland final. None of them contained goals.
That's not great now.
It's not great, is it? Limerick Galway had no goals and Limerick Waterford had no goals. So there's a little bit of a trend there. The Munster final also had no goals, Mike, and that also included Limerick.
Is that because the quality of the inter-county goalkeeper nowadays is higher than years ago?
No, inter-county goalkeeper is
that's a great point. Fantastic point.
They're definitely more handsome, Pat. They're more handsome and more athletic.
Hurling matches have gone a bit like boxing. If you've two with similar styles, you get, because this year we'll say Limerick and Waterford set up kind of in a defensive kind of a pattern. But you look at Tipperary and Galway, they played each other. They came out swinging like. So, you know, you're going to get that. The question, I suppose, is, are other counties going to look at the Limerick model And like everything else, I know someone said before there was someone pushing cars around the car park in Mayo and Irish dancing with everyone else do it the following year to win in All-Ireland. Yeah. Will everybody start to look at the Declan Hannan role and sit somebody back, play two inside, try to get wing forwards playing like wing backs? That's going to be the challenge for inter-county managers in hurling now. So I'm not so sure it'll work, but at the same
You're not so sure it'll work because Kyle Hayes and Garrod Hegarty's don't exactly grow on trees.
Like, no, they don't.
Yeah.
Race horses, yeah.
But it's not a, as I say, it doesn't have to be a 30-yard Jamie Callanan thunderbolt. It can be a scuffed shot from 4 feet out. It's a momentum changer. It's a punctuation point in a match. And hurling is beginning to lack punctuation points is the problem. I hate the lazy comparison with basketball because that's stupid, because basketball is an amazing sport in its own right and has its own rhythms. But hurling has become a little bit kind of, you know, go to one end, we'll score from 80 yards or we'll hit wide or the other team. And that's not doing justice to the skills of the 30 people on the pitch either, in my opinion. So I'm beginning to sound like an old man.
It is an interesting point though.
Yeah, Waterford and Kilkenny this year in the All-Ireland semi-final as well was one of the best games you're going to see in Stephen.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying it's across the board. I'm just saying it is
there
a trend.
There's always going to be cases where teams are going to set up defensively. I know if I'm playing against Limerick in the morning, I'm trying to say to myself, like, we don't want them to score 6 goals. We don't want to score 28 points. What are we going to do to stop them? Now, you can try to outscore them or you can try to stifle them. That's the challenge for teams in 2021, and we'll see how they go about it.
Yeah. I'm not sure Brendan wants to get rid of goalless matches, which is a shock for a former inter-county goalkeeper. Quite happy for clean sheets to stay, Brendan, yeah?
I know, I want to see goalies diving around the place, going mad and all that, like Stephen O'Keefe was in Croke Park this year. And in fairness to Nicky Quaid, in that All-Ireland final, I thought he gave an absolute exhibition of goalkeeping.
Yeah.
Under the conditions, the way the game was, his composure, all that stuff is really out of the coaching manual for goalies. You don't have to be, lads in Wexford and Kilkenny used to be slagging me every time I stopped the ball, my feet were up in the air. You don't have to be doing that. Nicky Quaid is that unassuming kind of a keeper who does his business correctly and simply, and there's an art in that as well, you know. So
and Stephen O'Keefe, Brendan, is going to be a big loss for Waterford this year, isn't he? Big loss.
Huge. Yeah, but you know, but Brendan, with hurling, you say, where's the ground hurling gone? The overheads pulling is gone. And hurling now has as many hand passes, if not more hand passes, than a Gaelic football match. And most of those passes are throws.
Retain possession. Yep. Don't give it away.
Stats.
And that's it. If you're putting the ball in hurling like this year, like I was loving the Joe McDonagh game, the final last year, ball came across, Shane Nolan pulled on it. And we all looked at each other and went, what's he doing? Do you know, and I'm here talking about, you know, pick it up, get it in your hand. And it was the right thing to do at the time, but everyone took it a gasping, he put it on the ball. Pulls on the ball over his head.
Did he take him off for disobeying instructions?
No, but at the water break at the quarter, we pulled him aside.
Gone out the tactics board and said, this is what you should have done.
We hit him with the tactics board.
All right, lads. I think go on, Pat.
Isn't that what they say about the statistician? That if you put one leg into a bucket of boiling water and you put the other foot into a bucket of cold water, statistically speaking, you're comfortable.
All right, I think we've started to put the GA world to rights, and we'll continue again next week. Thanks to Pat and Brendan. Don't forget, if GA championship draws are your thing, we've got loads of them next week. We've got two on Morning Ireland on Monday, one on the 6-1 News on Monday, two on Morning Ireland on Tuesday, and one on the 6-1 News on Tuesday. So don't miss those. And we'll be back again next week. And do catch all our other podcasts. We've got a soccer one, we've got a rugby one, and Marie Crow has a new podcast, We Become Heroes, where she interviews some of Ireland's top sports people. And this week's is CJ Standard, so that's worth checking out as well. I think that was a good return, lads. I think we've got a lot of the light and dirty diesel out of ourselves, so it'll be better next time. And thank you very much, and we'll catch you next week.
By winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it! It's over the bar!